operation or just tour?
I don't know. They're scheduled to get there at 3. It's a 3 to 4 tour in the afternoon, so I don't want them to hold off. It's supposed to be hot.
No, they're scheduled for Friday. So,
okay. Yeah, if they can see some fish at Minto, that'd be great. Even if they can't see the operation, if there's brood there, you know, something for folks to look at. So, okay, that's all I have for Minto.
Okay, South Sandy and Foster, same kind of story in terms of the Foster numbers. 313 total mark Chinook. Just about half of those came again this week. So.
And that's holding for brood.
Yeah, right, correct. Now. Yep. And a total of 18 unmarked fish have been outplanted. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Too many. Total of 9.
Yeah, okay. I was thinking, hey, hang on.
Ooh, that was, the 18 was steelhead. Yeah, so 3 unmarked Chinook this week, 9 for the total.
I mean, look, we're all thinking that nothing really has changed with the Foster operation, so it's likely that there's fish holding up down below over there. It's just they're not in the trap. That's
according to Brett, likely. Yeah, I mean, visually there's hundreds or 1,000 fish below outside of the ladder entrance hanging out.
Yeah. Hmm. And you said that was 18 winter steelhead that we had?
Yeah.
For the season?
Yeah. Yeah, nothing this month. 18 was the total. 9 unmarked Chinook have been outplanted.
I don't know how we get at the question of whether there's a larger proportion of the winter steelhead failing to enter the trap for the same reasons that the spring Chinook are. We can get at that because the spring Chinook surveys let us say this is how many hatchery and wild spawners spawn below Foster. It's kind of a census. I don't think we can get at that with the regular Brits-based survey for steelhead. Mm. Any thoughts? How one might one know whether a smaller proportion of steelhead than in the past are entering the trap? Or do you just assume that's the case because it's clearly the case with Chinook?
So Brett and I have looked at it as a proportion of fish over Willamette Falls that enter Foster over time. Mm-hmm. And it's, I have to look at the numbers, but significantly fewer. A lower proportion of fish enter Foster as a percent of steelhead over Willamette Falls.
With, that's like comparing new Foster versus old Foster.
Yeah, so if you looked at like the last, off the top of my head, the average of the last 3 years was, I'm just kind of guessing, actually, I'll just pull that file open, if that's useful.
Yeah.
Yeah, I need to be reminded on that. I think it was a 20% rate somewhere around there.
Doesn't help us here, but it's another.
Hey guys, this is Brett. I'm a little late. I just called in, just so you know, from South Indiana.
Oh, hey Brett. Thanks.
We were just talking about you, Brett.
Oh, good. Glad I missed it.
So the question we were just talking about, and you probably maybe have the answer offhand, Brett. So we were talking about winter steelhead trap efficiencies at Foster, comparing new versus old Foster with the proportion of fish collected of steelhead that went over Willamette Falls. Do you have that kind of locked in your brain somewhere?
Is that on the winters?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, I have it on a spreadsheet, and I got my computer on, so it only takes me a second to bring it up, so if you...
Okay. Yeah, actually, and I think I'm looking at that, too. So winters, if you looked at the last 3 years, we were 4%, 3%, 4%. 3 years prior to that, 6%, 4%, 4%. I think it's the summers where the change seems to be much more drastic. Like we're trapping half the percent of summers as we were the 3 years prior to.
Okay.
But we're still trapping a constant proportion of the winters. So they're not, there's no signal that the winters are failing to enter the trap. Okay.
I was kind of wondering too on the summers if that's because of the pileup of Chinook. You know, a lot of times, especially later in the season, the summers, you know, don't like swimming through all the Chinook. From what I've seen, they're kind of slow. You see that in the trap a lot. They'll leave the meat. Like on the big Chinook days, you don't see many steelhead.
Yeah, that's a good point. Sorry, Brett.
Yeah, no, yeah. So, if I mean, that's, I don't have the scientific evidence to back it, but I mean, it's just been an observation throughout my career that, you know, Chinook are pretty aggressive and tend to kind of be a bull, tend to be the bullies.
So, we don't necessarily see that same pattern with winter steelhead, it sounds like, but those sounded like pretty small percentages.
Yeah, you know, when the winters are, you know, moving through.
Yeah. I just wonder, like, what are those actual numbers? Are we talking, like, less than 10 fish? Because...
winter steelhead collected?
Well, yeah, you're
so you're talking to, the three-year range is 129 to 214.
Mm-hmm.
So 1 to 200. So as a proportion of the fish over Willamette Falls, yeah, that's pretty small. That's 4%, 3%.
Hmm. I was just going to
say. Video monitoring, Lebanon Dam. What a great idea.
Yeah.
That would give us the time.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Another point for that.
Oh, shoot, I don't even know this. Is Caudill's foster trap project include steelhead, or is it just radio tagging Chinook?
I don't know.
My recollection is it's just Chinook, but.
That's all I remember, too. Yeah.
He told me it was just Chinook.
Okay. All right. Anything else for South San Diego?
Did you have anything else for South San Diego, Brett? We just talked about the foster numbers before you got on.
Yeah, no, it's mainly just, you know, kind of a little extra effort on our summer steelhead collections just because the counts are, you know, like steelhead are obviously poor everywhere, even the Columbia system, so they're really hit hard here in the Willamette, and so we're having other facilities within the basin collect adults for us, so we're running around picking those things up and bringing them back here, kind of like similar to what we did 2 years ago. So anyway, just kind of continuing that effort, and then the knock on wood, we've been pretty lucky with our juveniles, we haven't no disease issues yet, so we're just getting done with marking those fish. We just finished yesterday, so we'll keep a close eye on them. Densities are real light, and so we're hoping that we just kind of see through without any major problems. About it.
Cool. Thanks, Brett.
You bet.
All right. How about Mackenzie? Kurt, are you on?
Mackenzie, fish health's good. Sarah was there last week and gave everybody a clean bill. They set up the marking trailer last week and started this week marking the Chinook. Mackenzie, oddly enough, has had the highest number of spring Chinook collected in the basin. Season total 1,427 adult spring Chinook collected last year at this date, 595. So,
1,427.
Explain that, Cam.
Wow.
Ladder is working. Cogswell Creek is working.
There you go.
They opened the trap early, and everybody is on board getting every fish out of the river that they can.
Mackenzie is also holding 300 pairs of Chinook from the Middle Fork, from Dexter.
And that's an interesting little bit of a kind of a natural experiment that's happening, replication of work earlier where they transported fish early from Dexter to Mackenzie Hatchery, but they perished at a high rate. While the Mackenzie brood did not, Mackenzie brood survived at a high rate. Pond next door full of fish, with Middle Fork fish died. Doing that again, and see if there's a different outcome. And at the same time, if we transport those 70 or 90, depending on where we end up, females for the lookout point Fry survival study to Corvallis, They'll be held in the 12-foot circulators at the Corvallis hatchery, pathogen-free well water, and they'll have a three-way comparison, Dexter survival in Dexter, or in the Dexter pond, Dexter fish survival in the McKenzie pond, and Dexter fish survival at Smith Farm, Fish Performance Genetics Lab. That was a very curious outcome a couple years ago where I'd anticipated pulling fish early out of the Middle Fork and getting them on clean water in the McKenzie would have automatically translated into high survival. No. So.
Hmm. Interesting. When did we do that? Like two years ago? 2 years ago?
I believe we did see comparable high pre-spawn mortality in the Middle Fork fish held at the hatchery, at Willamette Hatchery, as compared to McKenzie, but as you mentioned, the McKenzie stock held at McKenzie didn't see that same.
Right.
Effect.
Cool.
Are they holding pairs or just females?
Pairs. 300 pairs.
Because Carl and Jim wanted to hold just females because of the density issues at Smith Farm and then go back to Willamette Hatchery on their spawn days, rob some of their male spawners of milk and transport the milk back to Smith Farm to fertilize the fish. Then they don't have to hold males.
That's assuming the maturation timing matches lines up, which it should, but
okay, interesting.
So Cam, are these, what's their final destination? Is it broodstock for the Middle Fork program?
No, the final destination for the Smith Farm fish is going to be the Lookout Point Fry Survival Study Round 2. Because we are operating under the assumption that we're going to have the same low survival as we got last year, we're taking more fish than we need. But they propose to take more fish than they really need, 90 females. The excess fish as fry or eyed eggs after we've got to that point can then be transported back to Willamette Hatchery and supplement their brood without any disease issues because Smith Farm is pathogen-free well water. So I've got it lined out so that we'll increase, I think, the probability of success of both having enough fish for the lookout point survival study and being able to supplement if they have problems at Willamette Hatchery with the egg tank goals and survival there. That's strictly for.
So adult Middle Fork stock held at McKenzie are specifically for Middle Fork production to try to work around the pre-spawn mortality issues at Willamette Hatchery.
Ryan, I'm trying to remember a couple of years ago, and did the pre-spawning mortality at Willamette exceed the pre-spawning mortality at McKenzie, but the Willamette fish held at McKenzie, but it was still high at McKenzie?
Yes.
Yeah.
It was worse at Willamette Hatchery than it was at McKenzie, but it was.
We're going to hope to not repeat that this year.
All right. Anything else from McKenzie?
Nope.
Okay. Cougar Trap, Cougar. Mr. Helms.
All right. Facility is up and running. Got the new pump installed late last month. And they got the sump work completed on one of the units. So we have one unit turning. So there's some good attraction flow in the tail race through the trap. Had 20 fish back so far, all non-marked fish. So that fish look good. Just starting to show up. So. That is where we are.
All right.
Where are you guys on the tagging and release downstream? I'm totally
aware. We're taking them, but we're assuming we're doing what we did last year, double ploy tagging everything and take them down to Blue River and okay. They come back a second time and they go above the dam.
Yeah, I've got a permanent and I've been working on MOC for that to make that a little bit more official. So.
Okay.
Hey Jeff, do you think you'd have that ready for the Willamette FPOM meeting next week?
Sure.
Cool. That'd be great. All right. Fall Creek?
Fall Creek has about Monday, 189 Chinook collected, 179 of those naturally produced, 10 ad clipped. Yeah, that's where we are. Conditions in the creek above the impoundment are holding, and our good flows are still fairly robust up there.
Crews have only seen whitefish.
Yay. Marshall did, Mayor did bust three anglers last week trying to fish the entrance of the fishway at Fall Creek.
Did you ever get your wire up there to catch the blue?
No, we're doing all that right now, yeah. No, we need to. Construction moving along. No lamprey. But we haven't been able to really trap like we have in the past this year. So, yeah, nobody. Yeah. The lamprey ramps down and the fight boxes are out. Yeah. All the construction, it's kind of chaos.
Two winter steelhead? Is that my recollection?
Yeah, weak, very weak. Maybe four, because we had a couple post spawn late ones. So, yeah. I didn't bring those numbers, sorry, but under 10.
Yeah.
Hmm. Any more predation issues?
Male and a female?
I would hope.
And male centric, Jeff. Kind of a dude run. Okay.
Did your river otter ever come back?
There's been reports that he's been maybe, but we haven't seen any evidence in the fish.
That's good.
No injuries. Just the normal pinniped injuries in the Fall Creek fish. A few lamprey scars. Oh, around 10 copepods in the gills in a lot of these fish. Somewhere around there. Yeah. Hmm. Keep an eye on that.
The pinniped marks seem higher this year or
less? The same. The Fall Creek fish get it. I don't know if it's because they are kind of early, that they take the gauntlet first. I don't know. We don't know. There's a lot of heel injuries, scraping, raking heel injuries, as well as some fresh chunks. But missing pieces of fins. Necrotic tissue on the fins is starting to show up in the Chinook as well.
Cool. Thanks, Doug. All right, Willamette and Dexter.
Willamette, we talked about the 300 pairs transferred to McKenzie. That's really the kind of the hot topic. That's not a great number of adult fish for Dexter for this time of year, so we're paying close attention. Dan and company are there today, this morning, working Dexter, so I hope to get an update here soon.
We're looking for 1,300 more fish to fill the pond on top of the 300 pairs that kicked in McKenzie.
Right.
And that's what's holding us up, because we also want to go in and get those fish for the surrogate project, but we're not going to take them off Dan's brood collection, because we agreed not to. So the fact that it's been slow getting the brood collection is kind of conflicting with other things, cascading a bit for the surrogate project.
Yeah.
Are you guys taking more fish over to Eastern Oregon for the tribes again this year?
The plan is to take a minimum of 100 males over there. Yep.
Does it have to come from Dexter?
That's a good question. Logistically, Dexter makes sense. But I guess
I don't think it matters when we talk about it anymore.
Does anybody really care that there was a small number of misgendered fish that actually in the Mile Pier spawned last year? My crews are experts. They're as good as you guys ever are, and we still get about 5 to 10% missed calls on kind of cryptic looking males. They call females every year. You do it, I do it, I know everybody does it. But that translates into active spawning them out here. There's some objections to that.
There are some objections. My sense is that we were only like 3% off. Like 6 females was the estimate, expanded estimate based on red counts. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty good.
Okay. Better than me on average.
There you go.
Okay.
I'll make note of that, Cam.
They're spawning them out there?
Say that again, Jim, or Jeff.
Is that a problem that they're spawning out there?
There was a presentation at AFS that suggested that yacht was a problem because there are folks in the Malheur drainage that are concerned that if natural production occurs with a listed species over there, then there might be some pretty significant ESA issues that get introduced to the Malheur Basin. Is that fair, Lance?
Yeah, it kind of depends on your perspective, because if you're concerned ESA-wise, you know, we don't want females over there, that whole problem. But if you're the tribe, you like to see those females digging reds over there, because eventually they want reintroduction. This is kind of the first step in that. So if you get a few females over there, I think that's a good thing.
Although, correct me if I'm wrong, Cam, but that presentation at AFS, the tribal biologist went out and attempted to destroy reds.
Yeah, I think I remember that.
They excavated reds.
Really?
We're not allowed to do that here.
I would think that they would want to learn something from that.
Proof of concept. You know?
Right. Well, in practical terms, it might be a good idea to have somebody with a really good eye making the call, and if there is a cryptic looking fish, then just pass it and move on to ones that's got a nice big snout.
The advantages will be about a month later than when we were last year for the first transfer, so that will help. I think that's all I've got for Lamidexter.
Lance, because I know you're going to ask, that money for redoing that brood pond up there, that's in the budget for FY19. We're asking for it. It's in there for 18 too. We don't know if we'll get it or not, but it's in there for 19 again.
Okay. Double lamet.
Double lamet. Yeah. That's kind of the highest priority thing we have as far as like extra money coming in for the hatchery program. It could be put towards deferred maintenance. It's at the top of the list. So.
And so the plans for that rebuild or whatever, is there something sketched out there, or is that in the works?
Yeah.
100 years ago, there was some work done on it.
I think there were some plans done before my time. I know there's some information out there. There's been a couple of quotes that are probably lower than what it would cost to do now, but I know there's some stuff. I know Dan has some information.
Yeah, I don't know if you guys, if the Corps engineers were involved with the design or if that was something ODFW did in-house.
I think it might have been.
I may have a copy of that. It may have been our ODFW engineers. I can check the prints.
This is Chris. I have that report that I could send folks that has drawings and plans that the state put together.
So it was ODFW that did the design, Chris?
Correct.
Okay. Looks like in 2012.
So Andy, that funding request, is that for on-the-ground work, or is that for design concept stuff that the Corps has to work through? Any idea on that?
I was thinking it would be for actual construction and building. I don't see any reason why the designs that we have wouldn't work, unless they were not fully completed or half-baked or something. But if we have, I mean, it's a pretty simple structure, so, you know.
Yeah, but there are complications with the water intake.
Right, yeah.
So.
We'd have to look into that, I guess. But if we can construct part of it without having to do the entire thing all at once, I'd be in favor of doing that. We can kind of do it stepwise without having to do it all at once, proceed like that. So. Once we have an idea of whether or not we're going to get that funding, I'll dive back into it and see kind of what it would take and what we could do with what we get. Because sometimes we don't always get as much as we ask for. We may get 75% of it or half of it or something. So.
And then I guess one more point on Willamette. We talked about the Burns Paiute transfer and budget. So just, I guess, for the record, the Burns Paiute's paying for the cost of transportation for fish from the valley to the Malheur. Mm-hmm. So they've issued a purchase order to cover the cost of transportation.
Cool. But you guys are going to drive the trucks out there and be ODFW transport trucks?
Okay. Yep. Yeah, they had talked about, they are going to do some telemetry work, I believe, on a small number. Are you in the loop on any of that, Cam? Mm-hmm. They had initially, the tribal biologist had proposed doing it at Dexter, but because of the length of haul and recovery of post I think initially they were talking about surgical implants rather than gastric, but anyway, they're going to tag some small number of fish at the release site, is my understanding.
Cool. All right. Anything else for Lambert or Dexter? Then moving on to Leeburg.
I really don't have an update there. Just, I guess, two things. Lots of trout hauling. Those guys are hauling trout all over the valley, reducing the number of rainbow trout on station. And as of the end of this month, we'll be down to 3 full-time staff.
And my understanding is that there is no immediate conflict on making sure that Hoganson's office space at Leeburg is disrupted at all, so we'll have normal access to the video monitoring and all that.
Mm-hmm. Yep. As far as I'm concerned.
Hey, Cam, do you have any updated numbers from Hoganson on the Leeburg passage numbers?
Yeah, we're ready.
Okay. Yeah, go for it.
The labor passage numbers are now being uploaded to the web every week or so.
Okay.
So it's in real time. The data are right now, we're holding at about a 15% apparent PHAWS above labor. That's the, I guess, 46 marked fish and then whatever, 200 something unmarked fish. That number will go down because hatchery fish fall back, but wild fish tend to stay up. We're going to be operating the left bank, south bank ladder trap starting July 5th to pull any cooked fish out of the system before they get a chance to go upstream, and hope for a below PHAWS, that everything will end up with a below PHAWS of 10%. We're kind of on the threshold there now at 15%, knowing some will fall back. So it's actually fairly promising. But what I did not do before this video was review the releases that are contributing to the fours and fives coming back this year. And I don't remember whether those were both 604,750 or whether one was 870,000 and one was 604,750. I just don't remember that. But still, it's, we're getting what looks like a high, a good capture of fish in the Mackenzie hatchery. That's one of the three legs of the stool. We're getting lower than last year, last couple of years, PHAWS, apparent PHAWS in real time at Leeburg Dam. We're operating the trap earlier than we have in the past and hope to extract a higher proportion of hatchery fish. And can I say, those things together might mean we get our first look at something close to 10% or less PHAWS. If it all works out, I don't know. We're trying, and we're on top of it.
How do you enumerate the fallback fish?
We use a by difference. So we have carcass recoveries that give us an accurate estimate of PHAWS above, and that number is routinely quite a bit higher than the PHAWS based on the counts. So we simply say the difference in PHAWS values between the carcass recoveries and the video counts is attributable to fallback and adjust the Leeburg counts accordingly.
Okay.
And apparently that's goes back to years past with she works for eWeb now. McLaughlin.
Lisa?
Lisa. Lisa McLaughlin.
Yeah.
And Kirk Shorter.
And you said starting to operate the trap on July 5th. And are we still going to shoot for 50-50 marked, unmarked as far as the counts go? We're going to start before.
So I have to rewrite the little white paper that I give to the group before we start. And my argument is that we've got actually a fairly low run size. The conflicts with operating that trap early date back to the years when very large numbers of fish were in the trap and wild fish. And you'd have to handle a large number, absolute large number of wild fish to
right.
pull out a small number of hatchery fish. But we don't have to handle a large number of fish, period, anymore. We don't have them. So I think it's justifiable to go ahead. And I'll get it on paper and get it out to everybody before we start. But justifiable to start a little early. Get a few more out. We were pretty successful last year, even though PHAWS ended up high. We got well over 100 fish out of the bigger trap that otherwise would have gone upstream, and some of them spawned.
Cam, I agree. I think as soon as we can get that thing started on the slow run here, decided, slow run here, period.
Well, I might be asking you for a letter of support if I get any trouble from human any more trouble from human resources. We have to hire people to do that, temps, and they're balking a bit just because of our fiscal situation right now. So, if I have to get you to write a letter to Heather, will you do it?
Sure.
Good. That'll carry weight.
By the way, the 5-year-olds coming back this year are from the 854 release in 2014. The 4-year-olds are the 605,000 from the 2015.
Okay, so I mean, that's even better, really, because you'd expect to have a better chance at low PHAWS when both broods contributed to this, the current run year, are from the low release.
Next year, right. The first year, that we have 75,000 leads for both 4s and 5s.
Bennett Dam counts, I apologize, I didn't get a chance to fix it, but there's an apparent error on the current count over Bennett Dam, where I think it's as simple as we haven't added on the fish that came up, 224 fish that came up in June to the cumulative total. If that's the case, then the cumulative total of non-marked fish over Bennett is about 300 fish. But the webpage now currently says it's 129. But the number of fish recorded over Bennett in just June is larger than 129. So it's gotta be something simple. It's just a mistake. I haven't tracked it down. I'll figure it out today and get that corrected. Are you on? If you go to the total at the bottom for non-marked, it's 129, but there were 200 and something.
Wild Chinook, 224 over June, but the total is only 141, so that's wrong.
Right.
So if the only thing that's wrong is that this wasn't updated by BART to include those 224 fish, then the true count over is about 365. That's suppositional. I'll figure it out this afternoon. Otherwise, all is going well. They're touring it tomorrow. And
there's negative one lamprey at Lower Bennett. How's that?
They fall back. If they fall back, we count it as it's a net count. It works.
It's messing with you.
Okay.
So what's going to happen at the end of this month, Cam?
At the end of this month?
Yes, because the end of this month will kind of be the end of that working period for the task order that has funding in it for you guys. Is BART gonna?
Our anticipation is that we'll use, because we're going to get this, we are getting these no-cost extensions,
mm-hmm.
right?
Well, yep.
Any funds we can bring in or savings from previous work orders that are still active, we'll be able to apply and keep people going. On paper, it looks like we keep kind of a skeleton crew going, including BART, through October 31st, me too, October 31st. After that, I think it's anybody's guess. You and Tom have had a lot more conversations about the possible trajectories than I have. He's left me out of the loop for a good reason. I've got other stuff to do, but
sure.
I mean, it's fluid. Do you know?
I don't, actually.
None of us really know.
I don't.
So we're operating under the assumption that we're going to be able to pull off something like a field season this year, complete all of the reporting requirements, and then sunset out at the end of October.
Okay. So, can anticipate at least getting some version of BART's current counts through the rest of the season.
We've got this set up so that the actual data itself then is sort of self-generating now. It's
right.
The base for all of this, the hatchery management information system now is a much improved version of the old system that tracks things like clipped and unclipped entry into the traps and how we dispose of. So,
yeah.
I mean, it's pretty severely optimistic, but there's going to be data flowing over time if nothing falls apart kind of between now and then.
Sure. And then, as far as like surveys this year,
again, skeleton
some
crews,
kind of
we've got good coverage now in Fall Creek because of the subcontract through Oregon State University, and we've got good good coverage in the South Santa Am because the Steelhead and Spring Chinook subcontracts through U of I.
than with people like the Sportfish Restoration folks have adopted the McKenzie, so they're going to do, and I've lined it out on a Gantt chart that makes some sense to me, where we'll get surveys conducted basin-wide early in the season, so this would be July, in the middle of the season when we'd anticipate onset of pre-spawning mortality if it was going to happen, so I'm thinking mid to late August, and then at the end of the season in September, the third week to fourth week of September. So instead of having continuous weekly 7-day rotation surveys basin-wide, we're going to have 3 sweeps, early, middle, and late. And my idea there is that then those data become superimposable upon the old data because they'll be conducted the same way. It just we simply will not have the same intensity of samples. We'll have fewer carcasses recovered, but we should still see all of the rents and be able to predict what the kind of cumulative function is for rent building. And if I'm right, and something doesn't happen like a really bad rainstorm in September, which can just shut us down, we'll have one final year of data that are comparable to the data that go back to 2002. After that, it's up to you because we don't know what's going to happen next year.
Yeah.
I'm confident the crews that we have in place now have all of them years of experience doing this, so there's no training requirements, there's fewer safety issues with getting brand new people fresh out of school on the job, and I'm cautiously optimistic we'll have real data this year.
Cool. Okay. Well, thank you for what you're doing to bridge those gaps. Appreciate it.
Part of the deal.
Okay.
And do you know what they saw yesterday on the middle court?
They saw a lot of gravel. They saw several live fish cruising through, and they collected no carcasses, zero mortality, even though they did every side channel below Dexter that they could possibly do. I sent them down with the Skadden's instead of the tower raft because the tower raft won't go into some of those side channels. And they said it was ideal survey conditions, live fish, but no carcasses. It was good.
Cool. All right. Anything else for updates? Nothing? Cool. All right. The only other thing I had on here was just a little discussion about future HMT meetings in relation to the upcoming contracts and how regional involvement from agencies fits into all that. So my boss, Tammy, has kind of instructed Chris and myself to I'm gonna have to like restructure a little bit about how HMT works. And I guess Tammy has concerns with once the work goes into contracts, we can't have outside agencies like NEMS or U.S. Fish and Wildlife instructing ODFW as a contractor what to do, right? So that instruction, if things change mid-season or if there needs to be a modification to the contract, has to come through the Corps, right? And so it'd be NEMS instructing Corps what to do, and the Corps would modify the contract, and then ODFW would do something different if that's needed. So Tammy had some concerns about how HMT works and kind of us all, you know, having input all together at the same time. So we talked about just like getting rid of HMT and just combining all this stuff into the Willamette FPOM meetings. I still see some value in HMT. But depending on how things go over the next couple months, and especially Cam with your guys' crew, maybe only having funding until October, and what that looks like as far as your ability to be involved in HMT, that may change. So, Lance, I want to give you an opportunity to kind of weigh in on that and tell me what your thoughts are, if you still find this stuff valuable as far as receiving updates with everybody in the room. I think we can still probably do that, but the more formal kind of like you having input directly on a course contractor, like, do you see the sticky position that kind of puts us in? You understand that?
I don't know, it's kind of the first I've heard of this. I don't know, over the years, just having all the agencies together has been great, you know, collaborative. Mm-hmm. That's how we work through a lot of the issues. I can't think of a situation where like IMS would telling ODFW to do something that would be counter to what, you know, other agencies want.
Yeah,
I hear that
sure.
concern. But yeah, I'm kind of new to me, so I'd have to think about it a little bit
more. Yeah, for
Were
sure.
Were there any particular situations where it was causing problems?
No, not that I know of. No, and I don't really even anticipate any, because we haven't had those kind of problems in the past. So I would have a hard time imagining any problems in the future either. But just because the nature of the relationship changed, because going from a co-op to a contract, you know, our contracting officers are very wary about other people kind of telling a contractor what to do, and a contractor doing something outside of the what's laid out in a contract puts ODFW at risk, and you guys obviously don't want to take that on. So it just kind of, I mean, I think it's more technicality in how things are communicated and whether or not, you know, something is done and how we need to modify the contract. Because under the cooperative agreement, we had a lot more flexibility. If we needed to change stuff in season, as we often do, we could do that really easily. But in this case, it may be a little more cumbersome. So.
Yeah, I don't know. Because, like, whatever the contract obligations are between ODFW and the Corps, those kind of stand for themselves, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they are what they are.
Right.
So any discussions here wouldn't have any bearing on the current contract, right?
I don't think so, unless we were doing things like changing outplant target numbers, or if we needed to change release timing or change release sizes from the hatcheries. All those specifics are in the contract, and so if we need to change those numbers, we can do that through a contract mod. It's not impossible, but it's not as simple, I guess, as everyone kind of agreeing in HMT and giving a thumbs up to make that change. It has to be more formal, and we have to, like, do the contract modification, and then I think the contracting officer sends that to ODFW, and they have to receive it and agree to it. And if there's any change in price, you know, over that stuff, so all that kind of stuff has to get worked out. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I don't know all the nuances of that.
Sure.
Well, what is the core thing about HDMT? Is it useful, or ODFW?
I've often always said that I found it useful, because there are things that come up at these specific meetings that inform me when I misunderstand something. I hear about it on a monthly basis, and it can correct my own thoughts, just because it's a complex system, a big one. Mm-hmm. No one person can possibly keep track of everything that's happening based on why I'm associated with the hatchery and the spawn ground surveys. So I've liked it, but I'm the one guy, and I'm the short-termer, so...
I've always found it useful, and it helps keep me on track with some of these things that I forget about. Having them as action items that I have to report back on every single month helps me keep track of stuff. It's easy to forget. And it's also nice to, I don't know, see people face-to-face and kind of get the monthly update, even if it's nothing more than an update. So I found value in them. But.
It's nice to be able to focus on this and on 10,000 other things, like you have to do it at long.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like I haven't really been involved with that pump that much, but what I hear is, like, when a hatchery issue or something comes up there related to the stuff that we live and breathe, usually is at the very last of the agenda, and a lot of times it doesn't even get covered. So there's that issue, making sure that we cover our issues. And maybe it's not, you know, monthly, but some other interval, but making sure we're having those discussions at least.
Sure.
And if it does evaporate, elevate its importance in WF pump so it doesn't fall through the cracks.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. Earlier in the agenda, how about that?
Yeah. First thing. Ryan, what do you think?
I think, follow up on Lance's comment, I think if it was something where we weren't meeting every month, to have it as a technical team for WF pump, where if an issue came up, rather than trying to drag the broader FPOM group into a detailed discussion to then plan a, you know, meeting or have a standing quarterly meeting or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
while a lot of what we talk about is, you know, or will be contract specific, a lot of the other stuff, the stuff Cam's talking about, these guys are talking about, isn't necessarily the details of the contract. So it's sort of more global management stuff, you know, Jeff and Elise's interest. So, I mean, those conversations still need to take place as part of the kind of the overall fish management globally in the basin. So,
right.
I think, you know, it seems like it'd be wise for us to continue it at some level. Mm-hmm. If it's not monthly, it either as needed or quarterly or something like that.
Cool. Okay.
Yeah, I definitely find value on that. That's good.
Nice.
Another alternative is to have Ryan head that meeting, and you know, we'll hold the meeting because it's internally it's good for us to talk also, and have a standing invite to him for that way it's not part of the water group.
Mm. Oh yeah, I see what you mean. Kind of take it outside of that water forum.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, those are kind of my thoughts too. I'm glad we're all kind of on the same page. I'll take this back to Tammy then and kind of let her know what the group feels, but I see value in continuing it. I mean, like you guys said, maybe not every single month, but at least while stuff's going on, it's being active. And I think as long as...
Hey, Andy, I'm on the phone.
Oh, hey, Tammy. Did you hear all that discussion?
Part of it was not only because of the contract, but it was also because ODFW and NIMS both were complaining about the numbers of meetings that they had to attend. And WCLOM covers a much broader range of topics than HMT. So if one of them had to go, it would be HMT. And it was Oregon specifically that had issues with the multiple meetings. So if there's value in it, then I would encourage you all to take that back to your other Oregon representatives, so that they are not reporting at higher meetings that this is a waste of their time.
So, I had responsibility to attend the HMT meetings. And I never objected to a monthly meeting. That was fine. In my experience, and I guess these are I've been more of an invited speaker at some of these RM&E meetings because I'm not part of the RM&E team. Those are the meetings that seem to go on, and just there's so many of them. So, Tammy, I don't know who was concerned about the number of meetings, but I haven't heard people objecting about this particular meeting at all. I certainly haven't objected to it. It's the plethora of RM&E meetings that are driving people nuts, you know, two or three a month sometimes.
Right.
And it certainly wasn't you, Cam. And I appreciate that you all find value in the HMT. I figured there was value in both meetings, but if the complaint was that there are too many meetings and one had to go, WCLOM does cover a greater range of topics, and Andy could meet with all the hatchery managers independently and report that back out at WCLOM. I don't care if we have HMT standing as long as the contract-specific language is not necessarily discussed in a way that it redirects ODFW without going through our process.
That's your point. Okay.
And probably just an understanding, Tammy, for other agencies like NIMS or the tribes or U.S. Fish and Wildlife, whoever, of how the relationship has changed between us and the state in going from the cooperative agreement to the contract, and how other agencies don't want to direct the contractor, but they can weigh in, especially through the Corps, to make changes if necessary. Does that make sense?
So on this contract stuff, Andy or Tammy could speak to what's down the road, what's changing on all of the hatchery related stuff, either in RM&E, the programs, what's coming down the pipe as far as what you know?
We are still in negotiations, so I really can't answer any contract-specific questions at this time.
So the status quo is being changed, and there's what?
The original intent was to maintain, for the most part, what we were doing in the past.
Yeah, the intent's to maintain status quo, not change how we raise fish or how many fish we release or what hatchery's involved. Yeah, not trying to.
But what about R&D stuff? What can you say on that?
Yeah. I don't know, Tammy, do you want to speak to that one or you want me to take a crack at it?
Operations doesn't do research, so it's just the M&E.
Yeah.
And that, there will be a coordination form coming out soon with details on that, and I would wait until we have all the information written down before I answer questions at this time.
Tammy, did you say a coordination form or forum?
Form, an MOC.
Okay.
Which is really more of an MFR because changes have already been made, but at least it'll all be written down so you can see the process that we went through and what we anticipate the future to look like. But I'm running that through Office of Council right now.
Okay. Any other questions on that? I know it's kind of a weird one. And there's some things that we can't even speak to right now, but.
You can't stop me, Tammy, from doing R. You can't even slow me down.
I just can't pay for it, that's all.
But I have to tell something to Tom. Tammy, you're saying that there's an MOC coming out soon that'll describe any changes, if any, to the R&E program, or M&E program, funded by operations and maintenance.
It will describe the short-term changes and the anticipation for next year.
Okay.
And we hope to have it out early next week so folks can take a look at it before the Willamette FPOM meeting on Wednesday. And it'll give everybody a chance to weigh in and comment and discuss. Okay, anything else? Any other items related to HMT? Folks on the phone, anything? Nope, all right, doesn't look like there's anything else here in the room, so with that, we'll wrap it up. Thanks for joining, guys.
Thanks, everybody. Thanks, everybody.
Happy solstice.
This is summer, right?
First day of summer?
It is.
I went swimming today.